Hello and welcome to Radio Prague. My name is Pavla Horáková and we begin with a brief bulletin of domestic news. In his New Year's address to the nation, President Václav Klaus said that the Czech Republic's accession to the European Union on May 1, 2004 did not prove to be a watershed in people's lives. The president said that although the ongoing changes have been continuous, people should be aware of them. In his speech, President Klaus criticized the fact that despite promises, the reforms of the healthcare and pension systems have not been launched. Mr. Klaus also mentioned the low voter turnout in the European Parliament, Senate and regional elections that took place in the Czech Republic in the past year. The president said that by not turning up, people expressed what they thought of those institutions. He concluded his New Year's address by saying that 2005 should not be a nameless year lacking in substance. He called on the Czech people to follow traditionalist, conservative and unideological goals and demand courage, responsibility and modesty from their elected representatives. The first Czech casualty of the Indian Ocean disaster has been confirmed. The victim was a young woman who had been holidaying in Thailand. The Foreign Ministry believes six other Czechs may also have died in Thailand and Sri Lanka in Sunday's catastrophe. A total of 45 Czechs remain unaccounted for, although officials expect most of them will be found once communications improve in disaster hit areas. Three Czechs are in hospital in Thailand with serious injuries, while two others are receiving treatment in Sri Lanka. Most of the Czechs still unaccounted for were holidaying in those countries. The government will hold an extraordinary meeting on the situation in southern Asia on Tuesday. Czechs have raised over 14 million crowns in public collections called by aid organizations to help the disaster-stricken countries in southern Asia. The state will donate another 5 million crowns on top of the 10 million already pledged. A Czech Air Force plane landed in Indonesia on Friday with over 9 tons of humanitarian aid. The plane was carrying water, medicines and water purifying tablets as well as body bags. It is due to bring Czech tourists back from various countries in the region on Sunday. Although New Year's celebrations in the Czech Republic were calmer this year, according to officials, they claimed 4 lives and another 4 people were seriously injured. Many people, including children, sustained burns from fireworks and many were injured in fights following excessive alcohol consumption. The first Czech babies in 2005 were born in the cities of Brno and Plzeň only 1 minute after midnight. In the first minutes of this year, 8 baby girls and 6 baby boys were born in hospitals around the Czech Republic, and their mothers will receive an extra bonus on top of the maternity grant given by the state. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The weather should be partly cloudy here in the Czech Republic with scattered showers or snow, and daytime temperatures between 4 and 6 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková, and that's the end of the news. You're listening to Radio Prague, where today we'll be giving you a chance to listen once again to some of the highlights of our interview program One on One during 2004. We've had many very interesting guests in One on One over the last 12 months, among them Suzanne Medes, a British citizen of German, Czech, Jewish descent who escaped Nazi-occupied Prague as a teenage girl but was forced to leave her parents behind. She told Jan Wellinger about the last time she saw her father, a political editor in exile, on Prague's Wenceslas Square.
Last time I saw my father must have been in April or May of 1939, when he wasn't living with us, he was in hiding. And my mother said, look, we're going to see your father today. We're going to meet him in Wenceslas. I've got something to discuss with him. But whatever you do, don't address him as dad. So my father was very much in fear of being recognized and caught. And we went to Wenceslas, and I saw a man with a hat over his eyes, with a false beard and with dark glasses, and barely recognized my father.
Mrs. Medes's father and mother, who were in hiding, eventually tried to follow their daughter. They successfully fled the protectorate, incredibly through Berlin, only to eventually be picked up in Norway and sent to the death camps. Years later, Suzanne Medes uncovered the details of their tragic fate.
Indeed, when they reached Berlin by train, Their friends plucked up courage and came to the railway station and gave my parents some fruit or money or something like that. And then my parents went to Norway, but when Norway was occupied, they were put on two ships, the men on one and the women on another, and bound for Poland and Auschwitz. One of these ships went aground on a British mine, this boat with the women. The Germans were determined to take these people to Auschwitz, that even when the boat sunk, they fished out the survivors rather than enable possibly a Norwegian fisherman to save their lives. I see you're shaking your head, and when I tell this story to young people, they always start crying because it really, I mean, it's only a small detail, but it just gives you an idea of the machinery, how it worked. We want these people to Auschwitz because we want to gas them, because we want to be able to say that this is the extinct race that doesn't exist anymore.
Suzanne Meddes. In June, Rob Cameron spoke to Professor Graham Melville Mason, head of Britain's Dvořák Society for Czech and Slovak Music. A fluent Czech speaker, he spent decades researching and promoting the work of Czech classical composers. Professor Melville Mason is also the only non-Czech member of the artistic board of the Prague Spring International Music Festival. Rob asked him how his involvement with the Prague Spring Festival began.
The involvement there started immediately after the Velvet Revolution, when obviously the old communist officials were dismissed, and a new generation of experienced people came in, the invitation mainly of President Havel to take over these posts. And among them were a number of people who I had developed great friendships with over the previous years, who were then at that time persona non grata with the communist authorities. And it coincided with the time when I retired from the BBC. Prior to my BBC years, I had had more than 20 years equally as a music advisor with the Edinburgh Festival. And so Petr Eben, who was the first chairman here, and Oleg Podgorny, the first director after 89, asked me if I would come and give them help as an advisor, since they felt that after 40 years of communism, they were rather out of touch with how things worked in the West in relation to musicians, the types of contracts they needed, the who was who and what was where, and how the Prague Spring should, although it was a well-established festival, should fit in now after 1989. And so that's how I became involved. And I thought it would just be something for a year or two, and here we are, 15 years on, and I'm still involved at their request, which is very nice for me, of course.
So you're the only non-Czech member of the board of the Prague Spring Music Festival?
Yes, the artistic board, yes. There are two boards. There's a management board, which and then there's the artistic board, which is entirely of musicians. At the moment, it's chaired by Josef Suk. And yes, I'm the only non-Czech on that.
Do you think Dvořák and other Czech composers, Jan Hacek, Martinus, etc., are they really that well appreciated outside this country? Obviously, there's been a lot more interest perhaps since 1989, since the fall of communism. But do you think they really receive the appreciation they deserve around the world?
Around the world, that's a broader question. Certainly with certain individual countries, yes. And we're fortunate that Britain is one of the countries which has appreciated the leading Czech musicians, without exception, certainly from the latter part of the 19th century. There's, again, something about Czech music generally which seems to appeal to British audiences. I think something in our two characters. Certainly there's much greater closeness in British humour and Czech humour than there is, say, with German humour. And certainly I think our two peoples, whether involved in music or not, seem to get on very well together, in spite of the pre-war strange statements of Neville Chamberlain about this strange land we know nothing about. I think we know an awful lot about it now.
Professor Graham Melville Mason. In September, we had a very special guest, Eva Nováková, whose mother, Olga Santová, was a much-loved broadcaster here at Radio Prague for many years. On the first anniversary of Olga's death, Ian Willoughby asked Eva Nováková what she remembered of the turbulent days of 1968 when Olga was forced to leave Radio Prague.
I can remember really the Russians come, all the tanks, and that we were really afraid. But fortunately, I was with my grandmother at the time, and my mother was with my father. They were broadcasting all the time, and I was very proud of her. Of course, it was very, very difficult for her to leave radio, because I think she really enjoyed her work and it was her life. But I think that she realized that this was the only way how to behave. And I think it was a very, very, very good example for me for future life. And I am proud, you know, that my mother was so brave at that time, really. It was a really difficult time because we were afraid of my mother, what's going on here in Prague. And my grandmother was really very afraid. But it was a good time and full of emotions. And after all, it was very, let's say, nice time when you think about it, because everything changed, you know, 20 years after that. So I think it was a good time after all.
Going forward to 20 years afterwards, Olga went back to Radio Prague in 1990, and as far as I know, she often used you to talk about any kind of issue simply as an English speaker. Is that the case?
Yes, yes, yes. I can remember this. It was really very funny. She would find some topic and she would talk about it with me. I realized that, you know, the life is really very, very colorful, and of course, you can speak about many topics and everything is interesting. I was really surprised, you know, how many topics my mother could mention and give to the listeners. I can really remember that she didn't use even, only me, but also my younger son. I think he enjoyed it as well.
Eva Nováková, the daughter of the late Olga Santová, who is much missed by all of us here at Radio Prague. Rob Cameron's guest in January was someone who describes himself as a health clown. Gary Edwards really is a clown, a professionally trained clown who wears a bright red nose, plays the tuba, and falls over a lot. But he does these things in hospitals across the Czech Republic, visiting sick and terminally ill children and trying to put a smile on their faces. Rob asked him what you needed to be a good clown.
A good clown needs to have a lot of skills. It's actually one thing I've noticed being in Europe is American clowns really tend to be more skill-oriented than European clowns, with the exception of Dimitri in Switzerland, who's a more musical clown, and he takes his students in that direction. But there really is that basic difference between American clowns and European clowns.
As I said, they brought some of your clown gadgets with you. Could you just...
I've always got these things with me. I can't go anywhere without it. You know, I'm sorry.
These are the tricks of the trade, then.
Yeah, I mean...
And the ukulele?
Ukulele. I just started playing ukulele actually about a year ago because it's such a great instrument for the hospital, which is what I'm doing now.
Mm, right.
And guitar's too big, and of course lugging a piano around wouldn't really work.
Right, give us a blast on the ukulele.
On a ukulele. Ukulele is such a great little instrument. And it's a really nice little instrument. It's just an all-around nice little instrument.
Tell me, what brought you to Prague?
What brought me to Prague? I was living in Germany at the time, and I realized that my German wasn't going to get any better. I mean, it would have taken a long time to get just a little bit better. And I always have been interested in languages, and I thought, well, the wall came down, the East opened up. I remember being on tour one time in Germany, and I had a couple days off. I thought I'd go to Prague, but they wouldn't let me in because I didn't have a visa. It was back in the 80s. And then when the wall came down, I decided to put everything in my little bus and drive to Prague.
Health clown Gary Edwards. Now, from a clown to a comic, or rather a writer of comics. Jaroslav Rudiš is the author of an imaginative comic series titled White Brook. His main character is Alois Nebel, a very unusual Czech train dispatcher who experiences visions on his railway line that cast the history of the Czech borderland into sharp relief. Nebel is a little guy in a long Czech literary tradition of little men. Let's hear from Jaroslav Rudiš, who was interviewed by Jan Wellinger during the summer.
I cannot do it different way. It's somewhere deep in me. I like Rabal, I like Hašek, and I like this small guys moving the big world or being destroyed by this huge world they cannot understand. And that's right, that Alois Nebel is also this small guy, but he knows quite a lot about the Czech history. In these foggy trains on his railway station, he sees like traveling the whole century with his good and bad side. There are like German soldiers, there are Soviet soldiers, there's everything which has destroyed this region in the last century.
And Jaroslav Rudiš admitted that in many ways the Jeseník region had remained haunted by its history.
Not just Jeseník, I mean the whole Sudetenland region, but Prague or Brno here has not changed so much as over there in the north or in the south in these border regions. There were like 3 million Germans living in Czech. They are now away. They left, but they took something also in their pockets. And if you just take a train to Jeseník, you definitely recognize the border between Czech or Moravia and former Sudetenland. Houses and castles and villages, they look different to me. And going to Sudetenland, I have it connected still with such a dark, melancholic, romantic feeling. Villages without people, totally destroyed houses. There's no living anybody there for 50 years. Old cemeteries. Definitely this region is destroyed, but there's also living like third generation of people who wants to find like their own roots.
You are listening to Radio Prague, where we're taking a look back at the best of One-on-One during 2004. In June, we had the honour of meeting the writer and journalist Neil Acheson, who's one of the UK's leading experts on Central and Eastern Europe. Mr. Acheson was in Prague at the time of the Soviet invasion of 1968, and Ian Willoughby asked him what was his most vivid recollection of that time.
Foot clouts. Well, there's several memories, many memories, obviously. But the thing I suppose I remember most is the sight of these big groups of tanks in the little parks in the middle of Prague, and the discovery that Russian soldiers, Soviet soldiers, didn't wear socks. Instead, they wore these strange bandages around their feet called foot clouts, which they used to wash, so that all around these tanks, there were these strange, almost merry, celebratory white ribbons waving in the August breeze as they dried their foot clouts after washing them.
Ian Willoughby also asked Neil Acheson why he had described the Czech nation as unheroic in one of his articles.
You see, a few days before the invasion, I remember there was a kind of spontaneous meeting of people, which there happened a lot in those days, at Mustek, at the bottom of Wenceslas Square. And I remember somebody making big speeches saying, the Russians are threatening us, you know, but we're not afraid of Brezhnev. We're not afraid of this kind of threat, are we? You see, and I remember a voice at the back of the crowd said, yes, we are. We are afraid. We are afraid. Yes. And a lot of people nodded wisely like that in agreement. And I thought, that's great. I really like that because that's part of Czech humanism, not to talk bombastic crap. Of course they were afraid. Who wouldn't be? I mean, they were prepared to stand up to this threat in different ways. But yes, they were honest about it. I like that.
In the autumn, Jan Wellinger spoke with Martin Štěpánek, who set a world record in the sport of free diving. For those not familiar with the sport, free diving is diving on one breath, the way swimmers use to hunt for pearls. The sport contains several disciplines, but the record that Martin set involved diving to 103 meters on one gasp and coming back up for air.
The dive itself, it's hard to describe. The competitive dives, they're totally different than training dives because you're trying to focus so much on what you do and do everything right, because dives into these depths, they're pretty much calculated the single kick of the fin. I know exactly how many times I'm going to kick before I switch to what I like to call different gear. You know, I'm kicking harder at the beginning, then easier. Then I'm approaching a certain point when I'm just free falling. Mm-hmm. Then I have to focus on my body position, be hydrodynamic, different equalization techniques, depending on the depth again. There's a lot of stuff. So during these dives, you're just so focused on what you do that most of the time I don't remember the dive. But the feelings afterwards, I do remember that. It's something really, really cool when you realize that you've just gone deeper than anyone else in the world before.
But Martin Štěpánek also says some of his best moments underwater have not involved competition at all, but a kind of blending into the undersea world.
I experience a lot of nice moments underwater. One of my best dives recreationally was in Hawaii about 2 years ago when I was playing with this turtle underwater. I dove with all kind of different animals, and of course dolphins are fun and you know, all that stuff, but I would never believe I can have such a nice dive and interaction with turtle. We were basically swimming around and dancing underwater for about 4 minutes, and I didn't even need to breathe. It was such a unique experience when you're forgetting about that you need to breathe and you're really part of the underwater environment.
In October, Rob Cameron spoke to Mimi Nguyen, a 26-year-old Vietnamese student who's been living in the Czech Republic for more than 10 years. One of 30,000 or so Vietnamese in this country, Mimi speaks fluent English, Czech and French, and has friends from all corners of the globe. Even though Mimi's been here for more than a decade, she still speaks fondly of her life back in Hanoi, and is sure that one day she'll decide to go home. Rob began by asking her why she'd come to live in Prague in the first place.
Why Prague? Because my mom, she studied here before in Academy of Art. And when I was a child, she sent me a lot of pictures and films and sweet thing from Prague. Orion, she sent me.
Orion chocolates.
Yes, Orion chocolate. I love it. And because of my mom, too, I came to Prague.
And Mimi, I'm fascinated by your name, because the name Mimi is something called your home name, but it's not the name that appears on your passport. Can you tell me more about that?
Mimi is a home name, and actually in Vietnam, every child has a home name. For example, my cousin has a home name as Cam. Cam is mean an orange, and my brother has a name Toi. Toi is garlic.
Garlic? Your brother's home name is garlic?
Yes, garlic. That's funny. After the child was born, yeah, and in the Vietnamese custom, we give the name of something that's very close to you, something that you use is every day. And in this reason, they hope or they think that the child will get like healthy and happy.
So what is your real name in that case?
My real name is Hoàng Lan. Hoàng Lan is meant golden orchid.
Golden orchid?
Yes.
A lovely name.
Orchid, yes.
So which is your surname and which is your first name?
Surname is Nguyen. First name is Lan.
Your surname is Nguyen, and that's a very, very, very common name in Vietnam. I've heard that more than half of all Vietnamese have the surname Nguyen. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. It's something like, some kind of like Novak in Czech Republic. And I don't
or
know,
Smith in English.
Or Smith in English, yeah. I think like 70 or 60% Vietnamese people has a Nguyen. And it's funny that in Czech Republic, a lot of people say, oh, I read about your brother in the newspaper, and say, no, it's not my brother. It's just like some kind of like Smith or Novak.
Mimi Nguyen there talking to Rob Cameron. Jan Čermák won the Best Translation of the Year award for his Czech version of the Old English epic poem Beowulf. Shortly before he received that prize, Ian Willoughby visited Mr. Čermák in his office at Prague's Charles University, where he recalled translating Beowulf while walking around the capital.
We used to live downtown in the center of Prague, much polluted, and the only way to resurface, to get away from it, was taking long strolls, long pram rides up to the hill of Vyšehrad. So that's, I suppose, when most of the Czech Beowulf came to light, to existence.
You mean you were translating it in your head, and then when you got home you wrote down?
I always left with a dozen of verses in my head, and if everything went well, I descended down the hill with some kind of Czech rendering of it in my head as well.
Who's going to read your Czech version of Beowulf? Just students, or are you hoping for a wider readership?
I'm hoping for a wider readership. With that aim, we tried to put the book together. Should be both for students of literature, students of English, and intellectuals eager to know more about the roots of European literatures.
Has Lord of the Rings mania had any influence on, say, sales of the book or interest among students?
I don't really know. The links are immediate, but perhaps more tenuous than it may seem at the first sight. Back to your question, I think that to some extent, yes. This was, after all those delays and the many years the book took to prepare, this was not a bad time to publish it after all.
And that brings us to the end of this special look back at the best of one-on-one in 2004. We hope you tune into that and all our programs throughout 2005. From me, Pavla Horáková, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks very much for listening, and we wish you a very happy new year.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Europe, 5930, 7345. 8h30, 8h57. Europe, 9880, 11600. 17h30, 17h57. Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 15710. 19h30, 19h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 9430, 23h, 23h27, Amérique du Nord, 5930, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.